You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another edition of the M Squared TechCast with our friend Mike Brennan, who is about to go on vacation. So, yay for Mike. Yay.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm tired. I'm over on the west side of the state at my sister's house right now, in fact. But then shortly, I'm going to be on the road north to Croton and joining a group of friends for a birthday party that we'll have to keep under control, you know, masks and all that jazz. But
I've been to a couple of those.
I think we'll mostly be on the boat. I'm a little apprehensive about getting on a beach with a bunch of strangers. Sure. And, you know, it's a weird, weird time, and hopefully it'll end pretty soon. But anyway, getting back to business, we haven't had Kathleen on the show. We've been so busy with the COVID stuff.
Right.
We haven't had you on the show in several months. So you have a lot to update.
We do. We do. And I'll just jump into it as I usually do. Interrupt me if you can, right? But this is Kathleen Norton Schock, co-host and co-founder of Diva Tech Talk, a 5-year passion project that is not as certainly not as prolific as IT and the D, one of my favorites, or of course this one, one of my very favorites. But we are coming on to about 100 podcasts now. We just did 99. And as you guys know, this is in addition to our full-time careers for Nicole Scheffler and I, who are the co-founders and co-hosts of Diva Tech Talk. It was founded to inspire girls and women to join and stay in the tech field by telling the stories of other women at all ages and stages who were pursuing technology, either in the beginning part of their career, or the middle part of their career, or for some of them, like Terry Takai, with an incredibly robust IT background, right? I mean, CIO of several states, you know, 20 years of Ford, and now. The president of an association that does nothing but talk about technology in the government. Well, so in any case, Diva Tech Talk, I'm sorry, Michael?
CIO of the Defense Department for a couple of years too, so.
Right. Oh,
oh that, yeah. That little outfit. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, how could I forget that? She left just in time. In any case, so Diva Tech Talk, we've been doing this, and we publish about once every 6 weeks usually. There's been a little bit of a hiatus recently, and I'll explain that in a minute. We always have a hiatus at some point, every couple of years. In any case, Diva Tech Talk, again, is the very lucky recipient of our 6th and 7th awards from the Association of Women in Communications, which is over a century old. It is considered probably the grandma of most associations that promulgate women in communications. And they, again, awarded us two awards, one for women's issues and one for quality of our podcasting. So even though there's this time in between, I guess we're doing a pretty good job. So that was really exciting. That happened. And you, Mike, were kind enough to publish the press release that went out on July 14th. And today is July 27th. But for us, that's really big news, right? So really excited about that. And then since I last saw you guys, I guess we published Sandra Istok, who has worked. She comes out of South America, but is a formal U.S. citizen now for many years, has a very robust and honored career as an IT leader among many, many retailers, and then has gone on to do some entrepreneurial things. So I would suggest that anybody who wants to know what it takes to rise from utter poverty. She spends the first part of the podcast talking about her childhood, and it is fascinating. And some of the things, the challenges she overcame as both a person and I would call it a soul, to pursue technology under the most negative circumstances you can imagine, and then continued to pursue it. Now she's in her probably late 40s, early 50s, and has finally started her own company. But she's worked for some of the biggest, most venerable retailers. And I'm not going to give away the secrets, but do go to www.divatechtalk.com. And that will be our podcast 99. And we just loved it. Nicole did that one. She did the last three, actually. And she loved meeting Sandra in person, hearing her story. It is incredibly inspiring. So go there, and then we will have more podcasts probably midway through the summer. We've taken a brief hiatus because Nicole, who is about to have her second child in September, but that never slows her down, right? Has been pursuing her career at Cisco. She just got another promotion in the fourth quarter of last year. She's doing amazing things as director of strategy there. But on top of that, she wrote a chapter in a book along with a fairly famous author, Jack Canfield. And then on top of that, she has launched a smaller version of Diva Tech Talk, little 10-minute podcasts, and that is called Diva Tech Success. And what those are sort of bite-sized interviews, sort of different from what we do, because what we do is close to 40 minutes for any given podcast, and is always accompanied with a 5 or 6 paragraph story. Mm-hmm. In the case of what she is doing right now on this smaller set of podcasts, they're very fast, and they branch out beyond just what I would call tech leaders. So it's kind of a little branch of what Diva Tech Talk has done, but it also is part of her entire second or third career as a speaker and an author. So we've taken a bit of a hiatus. Also, something I want to talk about, if you guys are kind enough to let me back on in August, is I am in the middle of a fight for First Amendment rights, which I'm under muzzle about at the moment. But by the time our August podcast rolls around, and I'm fairly certain all three of you will agree with what I'm doing, I will be out of muzzle and be able to talk about that. So we took a hiatus for those two reasons. And then, if you don't mind, I'm going to segue to the other thing that, besides my career, my daily career, is part of my volunteer life, which is the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, going on 20 years. I am a volunteer for 17 of those. And MCWT is the premier nonprofit supporting girls and women in tech. And again, COVID-19 be damned, you cannot slow down a bunch of women with a mission. So let me give you some of our latest news at MCWT. First of all, we just had appropriately social distanced and masked our 14th annual Southeast Michigan Golf Classic, which actually, despite the climate and despite the fact that we had 60 less participants than we normally would have, was extremely successful. It was our third most successful one of these, by the way, because some of our sponsors, while they didn't come, just went to the link and donated anyway. So the revenue was the third largest we've ever had. We raised over $187,000. 30 companies came and sponsored the event, some sponsored virtually, and we had all the precautions in place. I mean, it was really rigorous what we did. And our overall sponsor was a company that it's their first time sponsoring, Sentinel One. So that was pretty exciting. And then following on to that, as you may remember, Melanie Kalmers is this year's president of MCWT, and she is the CIO for a very well-known known company called Dow in Midland. And under her leadership, we have been expanding rapidly, even faster than we were before, in West Michigan, in both the Lansing area and the Grand Rapids area. So we're really excited. We're going to hold our very first, our inaugural West Michigan Golf Classic on September 21st at Stonewater Golf Club, right outside of Grand Rapids. And for anyone who wants to participate, they can go to our website, www.mcwt.org. Sponsorships and registration will open the third week of August. We always get sold out really quickly on these things. So wait until the third week of August and possibly put it on your Google calendar if you want to apply to be a sponsor. It will be much smaller than the classic we've done for 14 years on the southeast side of the state. But again, all safety precautions will be intact. And we feel it's very critical that we start this and then continue it because we need more engagement for our wonderful partners on the West Side. Then third, of course, you know, every year we hold 14 camps for girls. And this year, all of our summer live camp programs were canceled and replaced with our virtual summer learning series. They are still 1 week long camps. We still hold them 2.5 hours a day. And the virtual program is made available to all Michigan middle school and high school students interested in participating for free. No charge at all. Wow. In other words, there's not an application charge. There's no charge of materials. This is being sponsored by Dow and also by the very generous Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, who was probably one of our very first sponsors when I first started 17 years ago. I remember taking a check from them. And a few camp weeks are still available for any kids who want to register, any girls who want to register. And again, registration.
And what are the programs, Kathleen, what are some of the programs at those camps?
Same as usual. We'll be talking about an awful lot of things that have to do with the latest and greatest in technology. But we will, again, be showing basics of AI, basics of AR, basics of robotics, basics of programming. There will be inspiring talks by women leaders to talk about how you pursue a career. It's really going to be very cool. And registration, again, for these is at www.mcwt.org. And then my fourth point, important point from my perspective, because I've been a member a long time, is that we are continuing our Lunch and Learns, which we just re-inaugurated 2 years ago, and our Connect Nets will be taking place. These are two separate sessions, one occurring at noon, the other occurring usually after work at night. They will take place every month until the end of the year. So we've been doing one Lunch and Learn session since January. The next one is August 6th, and the topic is data analytics. And then we will be executing our virtual Connect Next series, and that will have a variety of executive speakers, mainly talking on thought leadership topics. The next one of those is August 20th, and more details will be on our website this week or next. The virtual learning series, by the way, is also sponsored by Dow and Blue Cross.
All right, we got 1 minute. So this is where you can put out your information on how people can reach you or go to your various websites, won't you?
Right. Do that. So Diva Tech Talk is at www.diva talk.com. Our 5 years worth of podcasts are timeless. So go in, listen while you're traveling to work or in your office or just when you're on your headphones. I've listened to a few to fall asleep sometimes at night, although they keep me awake because I'm interested in these women's stories. But there's also always an accompanying story. So if you can't listen to it on SoundCloud or the Apple Store or Google, you certainly will know the whole story just by reading and looking at the links. So that's www.divatechtalk.com. And as I've repeated, I think a few times, MCWT is at www.mcwt.org.
Any okay. Thanks. All right. Thanks.
Wish me luck on First Amendment rights.
Yes. Okay. I can't wait to hear the story behind that, but I'm sure we will next month. Okay. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been watching the M Squared TechCast.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have calling in, I'm not sure where Dan lives, but Dan is a member of the Michigan Public Service Commission, appointed last year by Governor Whitmer to that post. And one of the press releases that came across the transom last week was how the Public Service Commission, I don't want to use acronyms, is working to not only make sure that our public utilities, you know, gas and telephones and all the rest, are working properly, but also you've got some assistance available for folks that are struggling financially because of COVID, right, Dan?
That's correct, yes. And I'm actually here in Northport, Michigan, the tip of the Leelanau Peninsula, where Matt Rausch is still very much a legend.
He's a legend in his own mind as well.
I would say infamous at this point.
Yeah, right. Glorious, perhaps, you know. So anyway, while we talk a little about that, obviously, particularly now, we don't know exactly what Congress is going to do for the rest of us, but there's some 30 million people nationwide on unemployment, and I'm not sure what the number is in Michigan, but it's a large number. So a lot of people are really struggling financially. So what exactly are you guys going to do for them?
Well, I think the most important thing is that assistance is available, that it has been available, that we've seen some increases in the federal funds and some unique abilities to use those to help the Michigan families that are struggling. So you can find, if you're one of those people, you can call your utility or telecommunications provider. A lot of them have programs. They differ somewhat utility to utility, but for folks who are falling behind or in danger of falling behind, particularly if you're low income or a senior, small businesses, other customers, there's a range of offerings. You can also call 211 or go to mi211.org, mi211.org for help. And this will connect you to assistance programs offered by nonprofit organizations across the state, many of whom are partners under the Michigan Energy Assistance Program. So there's a range of assistance that's out there. Best place to start is either with 211 or to call your utility directly and see what they offer.
Okay, so how does the approach taken by Michigan to protect customers differ from that taken in other states? Are there any initial lessons learned or data points on the results?
Yeah, you know, a lot of states, and for good reason, rushed to put moratoriums in place, moratoria, I guess, and ensure that customers wouldn't be disconnected. We did that about 10 years ago as part of the Great Recession, and what we learned was that, you know, once the economy started turning around again, those folks had huge unpaid bills, really were in a position where it was impossible to come back. And yet everybody else moved on. And so you found a whole group of people that were struggling. And then by the time things started turning around, nobody really paid attention to them. And I think that's what you're seeing in some other states, that you're seeing unpaid balances and late balances really growing and growing to dangerous levels. We, I think, using the lessons that we learned from 10 years ago, we didn't actually put a moratorium in place. Instead, we worked with the utility providers and the telecommunications providers on voluntary commitments not to disconnect folks, particularly low income and seniors, and then worked to make sure that the assistance was there, that we were addressing people where they were and trying to identify the places where COVID was impacting people's ability to pay, communicating the assistance offerings that were in place, and really sort of taking a much more granular, individualistic approach to helping folks who were struggling and falling behind. And I'll say, you know, it's early. I have no idea what's going to happen with this pandemic. But to date, we're actually seeing the folks who are 30, 60, 90 days past due actually holding relatively steady. And I think, you know, nobody's declaring victory yet, but so far I think we've helped a lot of folks weather the storm by sort of sending signals that they still got to pay for what they use, but that there's assistance available if they're struggling.
Yeah. That any idea what the number is on that? How many folks that you are currently helping get your arms around that at all?
Yeah. So one program, we used some of the Federal CARES Act funding and then partnered with the utilities, and then the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, and used $17.8 million, I think, of that bucket of federal funding to literally pay people's bills directly who were struggling. Huh. And that was matched by the utilities contributing or forgiving 25% of the balance. So 3/4 of it came from federal dollars. 1/4 was forgiveness by the utilities themselves. And so far, we've helped 40,000 Michigan families under that program of avoid falling behind on their utility bills.
Yeah, that's Matt, the people that can least afford it right now, that's, like you say, the seniors are people that are already, you know, desperately poor or not working, you know, minimum wage type jobs. that's a hole that's really hard to dig out of when you get a, you know, suddenly you've got to come up with $500 or they're going to cut off your lights or something. For some people, that's just, they can't handle that. But it's really good that you guys are doing this.
Yeah. And I will, you know, give a lot of credit to the utilities on this. I think they also saw what happened when balances got out of control and how hard it was, you know, both for their customers, but also for them to dig out of those holes. And they've been creative in identifying customers who usually pay on time. And all of a sudden, you know, we don't know that it's COVID related, but we know that they've missed a payment for the first time in their history. And how do you reach out to those folks and offer assistance? For the people, as you talked about, Mike, who've got those high balances where it may be impossible to get back on their feet, how do you pay them down to a point where then they're eligible for assistance programs? And so there's, I think, a range of efforts. A lot of them are pretty individually tailored to individual circumstances, but to try and meet people where they are and then line them up with the assistance that's available.
So how do these efforts that you're doing tie in with existing utility efforts? I know when I was at WWJ News Radio, I worked quite a few telethons for DTE's Heat and Warmth Fund, which, you know, basically keeps people connected through the winter. And some of the stories I hear of people really, you know, people, I can't imagine living through a Michigan winter without heat, but there were people doing it, you know. So how do your efforts tie in with those?
Yeah, so some of the additional funds, in addition to sort of the Energy Direct payment programs, are actually now being run through some of those same grantees. You know, the folks who are active in communities across the state, whether it's, you know, the Superior Watershed Center up in the UP or Heat and Warmth Fund in Metro Detroit, to give them extra dollars available for the, you know, the increased customer loads that they're seeing. I think the other piece that we're trying to do sort of along those lines is just to get the word out. I mean, in some ways, you know, Tremaine Phillips, one of my fellow commissioners, was actually on a radio program recently and sort of the same sort of thing, whether it's a telethon or just trying to find ways through social media and the like to try and get word out that if you're struggling, we have additional dollars available. You can go through the state or you can go through, you know, that trusted nonprofit that you've worked with in the past and trying to make sure that they've got the resources available and that people know where to go.
So that covers us on gas and electricity and things. What about in the telephone space? What are you doing there? Because people clearly need their phones, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's sort of a two-pronged approach. The first is most of the providers in Michigan signed on to the Federal Communications Commission Chair Pie. They're issued a challenge, the Keep America Connected Challenge, to not disconnect folks through the first several months of this. I think I'm either all or almost all of the providers that serve Michigan signed on to that. And I think a lot of people stayed connected. And then there's an awful lot of work being done on sort of broadband and broadband availability. So trying to accelerate some of the grants we've done in partnership with Connect Michigan, a mapping program for Wi-Fi hotspots across the state, you know, for those students or workers who may not have broadband at home, either because they, you know, because they can't afford it or because it's not available in some parts, but to give them a map of locations in their communities where they can go, and whether it's, you know, the library or a school or whatever, where there's broadband availability, so that they can go and stay connected through this. There's a fair amount of attention. We don't regulate communications in the same way that we do energy, but we're trying to figure out same thing, how to keep people connected.
Yeah, because I know internet availability, high-speed internet availability is a big issue where you are in Leelanau County. I still subscribe to the Enterprise, so I read about it occasionally. And it's an even bigger issue in some urban areas and the UP, where there are big swaths where there just isn't any, you know, and there are some wireless providers, you know, trying to make a go of it. But it could be a real struggle to work from home or to study from home in that kind of environment.
Not to interrupt, but even Detroit is only has 40% people are not connected to broadband. I think probably the number is higher than that, but that's the number I've seen. So it is a critical problem. So.
Yeah. And, you know, as whether it's the, you know, all of our kids now essentially working from home and who knows what happens in the fall, but that, in, you know, access is critical. And you're absolutely right. People think of it as a rural issue and it is, but it's also an urban issue. And there's an awful lot of places, both rural and urban across our state, that don't have it. If anything, I hope, you know, there's got to be some changes that come out of this and an increased focus on broadband availability across the state in whatever community folks live in has to be pretty close to top of that list.
Yeah, I think a lot of the schools, whether the administration likes it or not, are going to be forced to go to virtual. When I'm in Ann Arbor, I'm not in Ann Arbor today, they've decided to go all virtual because that's a different community. It's a very, high educational, high income community. So it's not typical of the rest of the state. But I think when you start to hear all these plans being rolled out by school districts around the state, they're all going to depend on broadband to some degree. Some of them are going to allow kids to go in every other day or for a few hours each day. But in the end, the bulk of it's still going to be broadband, right?
Yeah, I don't think I don't know. And I think there are active conversations probably happening in every district. But I don't think there's a world in which broadband is less important than it was 6 months ago.
Yeah. We have about 3 minutes left now. I just wanted to ask, what changes has the commission taken internally in response to the pandemic? Is everybody working from home at the MPSC now, or how's that working?
We are. And some of our folks, this is business as usual. Our gas safety technicians have worked from home so that they can be closer to investigations and emergencies, if and when they happen. But for the rest of us, we've got about 175 people who usually work out of the Lansing office, and we transitioned over a weekend. I think we were all there on March 12th, and by March 17th, we were all working from home. And we've moved our hearings, sort of the back and forth that happens in our cases, as well as our meetings online. And the feedback we've gotten has been really positive. In certain cases, I think we've gotten more public input as a result of people not having to travel to Lansing to sort of make their voice heard on a meeting. And I think that's been really positive. Stakeholder groups and the rest, we've been able to bring in national folks who usually would have to fly in, and instead they can sort of Zoom in. And we've learned lessons in this that, I think everybody hopes that we return to something that looks like normal sooner rather than later. But I would imagine that some of the lessons that we've learned will be sticky, and that we can improve our processes to better serve Michiganders as a result of having learned the lessons that we have.
Yeah, better than normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think this is the new normal. I don't think we're ever going back to the way it was. Matt and I've talked about this. A lot of offices, all this office spaces have been leased out so you can be in the pod farms. Now that the employers have seen that people can work from home and probably in many cases I've heard are much more efficient. I mean, everything is going to change. I mean, you got to begin to question, why do we live in schools anymore?
I'm wondering how many real estate investment trusts are going to be in trouble that are invested in office complexes, because I don't think a lot of that space is coming back anytime soon.
So. No, definitely not. So we're almost out of time. If folks want to reach out to you, Dan, or get to the Michigan Public Service Commission or attend one of your virtual meetings, how do they do that?
Sure. Our website is michigan.gov/MPSC, as in Michigan Public Service Commission. You can follow us on Twitter at Michigan PSC. And again, for those struggling, probably most importantly, 211 or 211.org my211.org, or call your utility provider or telecommunications provider. They've got assistance available.
Tell them that Dan Scripps is in your corner, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, Dan, I appreciate you being on the show. Matt, take us out.
All right. Well, we'll be back in just a minute with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching at mitechnews.tv and a whole bunch of other places where fine podcasts are distributed.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast, where we are interviewing the owner.
And the bar is open, by the way. So
yeah, clearly.
It almost always is, yeah.
I want to, as a programming note, we had said that Fred Brown, our infectious disease expert, would be joining us as he does every week, but he alerted me this morning that he's actually not feeling very well and wasn't really up to doing the show. And we're just hoping it's nothing major, but it's, you know, COVID.
Yeah, that's no good.
So he's not feeling very well. So Mr. Technology there decided to that we would bring him in, since he's always there in the background, Dave Phillips, and him and his partner in crime, Bob Waltenspiel, is the proprietors of IT and the D.
Yep, and Podcast Detroit, yeah.
Yeah, and so let's talk a little bit about, I know you've had to make a lot of changes. I mean, I know you're just starting to really amp up and have studios everywhere in the world, and suddenly you've had to really scale back yourself, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've always had the, well, not always, but since 2016, we've had the Royal Oak location that's got four studios and the video studio in it. And then, you know, we had the downtown studio at Detroit Shipping Company up and running. In fact, that just crossed 2 years. But then literally right before this all this nonsense hit, we opened up the Northville location, and then almost immediately had to shut it back down again. And so we closed up shop on March 16th is when we closed, and we are just now starting to reopen. We've started with the Detroit and Northville locations, mostly because those are single studio locations, and so I kind of want to see how realistically how people are going to act before we roll out the multiple studio location and open that back up for business again.
You're keeping your cleaning lady very busy these days, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and so laughably, so, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, so she was the last person in all of our studios because she came through, I think it was a Tuesday that we closed, and she came through that Thursday and did her usual cleaning stuff. So we actually had, you know, so the studios were just kind of sitting there. But I mean, you know, if nothing else, the months and months of dust had accumulated. But then we had her come in and do a deep clean on all of the studios, just getting ready for things to open. And, you know, and then, you know, there were a couple of false starts. I mean, you know, especially with the Detroit location, you know, there we're kind of wholly dependent on Detroit Shipping Company, you know, their hours of operation, and they had a situation where they closed down for 2 weeks right as we were getting ready to reopen the doors there. So we kind of pulled back while they were reconfiguring everything for outdoors, and that's the thing. I mean, so especially in the downtown location, it's kind of interesting to watch how things are starting to come back already, which is nice, and in some cases it's a little frightening how relaxed and casual people are getting about certain things, but it's good to see some of the other things. Like, so, you know, at DSC, you know, you have to wear a mask when you walk in. You have to wear a mask until you're seated. You know, you can't walk up to the, I don't know if you guys remember there's the indoor courtyard and the outdoor courtyard. And the indoor courtyard used to be where the restaurants are and all that kind of stuff. It used to have huge picnic table benches, and it was a lot of community seating and that kind of stuff. Well, those are all gone because, I mean, let's be real. How long, you know, when are you going to feel comfortable sitting next to a total stranger eating food again? We'll see how that goes. So they actually took all those picnic benches, chopped them all up, and turned them into booths that are, so the outdoor parking lot is now just completely filled with booths, and they put like you know, sun shades over the top of them and that kind of stuff. So you can't walk into the bar that's inside and order. You've got to, you know, place your order with somebody, and they'll get your drinks for you and bring them out to you. They've got the front patio going that way. But yeah, like even last night, so I was there pretty much every day. I was there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you know, every day sitting there looking out the window, because it's we're right on the front of the building up on the second floor. So looking out the windows onto Peterborough Street, you could see all the pedal pubs pulling up and, you know, everybody jumping off. And honestly, one of the interesting things to see is probably every minute or two, there was an Uber or Lyft that was pulling up and dropping people off. And I mean, for a couple months there, it was impossible to find a ride share down anywhere in the city. So I mean, that's good to see. So I mean, it's, you know, so we're, like I said, you know, we're slowly opening back up, and we've had a tremendous response. I mean, you know, over the course of the past 4 months, you know, just like with you guys, we've been running most of our shows via Zoom, and we've added those capabilities. And like, you know, like the show that recorded there last night, you know, was a roundtable discussion with, I believe, 8 people, if I recall correctly, but only 3 of them were actually in the studio. You know, we've got 55-inch TVs in all the studios so that we can use Zoom to bring guests in and kind of keep the numbers in studio down and help keep things safe that way.
Yeah, your main studio in Royal Oak is actually 4 studios in one building and a small TV studio in the other.
Yep.
That one, you know, I know that's Party Central typically in the old days.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming moving forward, you're just going to restrict it to the hosts and the guests, or what?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, so I wanted to get Detroit and Northville open for a couple of weeks to see how people were going to do in, you know, in the single studio locations, and, you know, make sure that, you know, the way we're doing things, like, you know, I'm swiping out the mic muffs, you know, after every show and making sure everything gets, you know, wiped down and cleaned down and all that stuff. And making sure that actually works properly, because yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I think you've been there on a Monday night with, like, when we were doing our show, and, you know, 4 studios all running simultaneously with anywhere from 6 to 8 people in each room, plus people waiting in the green room in the waiting area. That's not something that's going to be happening again anytime soon. You know, like, even as we're reopening, you know, we've told people, hey, we're limiting capacity to 50% of prior capacity. So, you know, those rooms that used to support 8 people now only support 4. And, you know, if you've got more than that want to come in, hey, here's the Zoom link, have at it. You know, that's what the technology is there for. And it's, like I said, we've had a really good response. I mean, nobody's been gun shy about it. Nobody's been, you know, giving us too much flack about it. The interesting thing that I don't know that we're going to see a time when we're going to have all of our shows back in studios again, just because, I mean, there are some people that have already asked me, hey, can we just stay like this, you know, running via Zoom? Cause, you know, my family, you know, with, you know, either it's, you know, immune compromised family or, you know, something like that. And, you know, they're just more comfortable running things this way. And yes, I mean, we're going to keep supporting it, you know, moving forward.
And I think we've all gotten pretty good at this technology too, over the past, God, almost 6 months now, or 5 months.
Yeah, no,
people are much more accustomed to it now, and it doesn't, you know, look any worse than a camera in a studio. You know, really?
Nope. I mean, and it's you know, and it's like, you know, we've had we had 4 or 5 shows that have started up with it, which I never imagined happening. You know, shows actually starting during this nonsense with us. So they started in the Zoom world, and laughably, one of them is now so they did about 10 episodes this way, and they did their second episode this morning down in the Northville studio. So they're trying to make that transition, you know, from Zoom into being in the studio again now. And that's what I've always told people, you know, over the course of this, is to me, Zoom is the equivalent of at least the bare minimum of being in studio. You know, you can see each other's faces, you can make eye contact, you can read body language, you can see when people are like chomping at the bit to say something, you know, as opposed to something like Skype or, you know, a phone call or, you know, your blog talk, whatever, where, you know, you can't see anybody, you're stepping over each other all the time when you're talking over each other and all that stuff, you know. And then what you want to do from there is up to you, just like being in the studio. Like, if you want to just record the audio and have us, you know, blow the audio out, yep, cool, we can do that. You want to do video too, just like in the studios. We have cams in the studios. We can record video too. Hey, you want to go live? Yep, we can go live too, just like we can in the studios. So, I mean, this is, it's like I've told people, this is about as close as you're going to get to being in studio without actually being in the studio. And it's been a good substitute.
How many shows are you? I know before you were well over 100. Has this Have you lost any shows in this transition?
Not necessarily lost. You know, we had shows that definitely said, "Hey, we're going to take a break and wait for this kind of to blow over." Most of them have already come back. I think this lasted a lot longer than a lot of people have thought. And especially with all. Yeah, well, and especially with, you know, the way the news is looking and everything else, it's not going to end anytime soon. And, you know, some people were chomping at the bit and ready to get back at it. And so it's been, you know, so the first struggle was, okay, we went from 8 studios in 3 locations to essentially 2 virtual studios because we picked up Zoom licensing for our main one and then the one for the Northville guys. And so trying to do a lot of calendar shuffling and, you know, hey, I know you always run, you know, Tuesday nights at 7, but we have 4 shows Tuesday nights at 7 and we can only support 2 now. Can I get you to move to, you know, maybe 8 o'clock on Tuesday nights, or how about a Wednesday or a Thursday? And so, I mean, that's one of the lessons learned for us is, you know what, maybe we don't need 4 studios, you know, that run simultaneously, you know, because we've done a good job with getting everybody spread out. And, you know, maybe that's one of the ways, you know, one of the things that we can do moving forward is, you know, knock down, you know, the number of available studios and just say, hey, yep, we've only got 2 now, you know, in Royal Oak or, you know, wherever. And this is our available schedule and it just is what it is.
What other changes have you been forced to make, if any, because of the pandemic?
Well, I mean, our billing rates went way down. you know, I mean, and that was just, you know, a move that I decided to make, you know, just because, I mean, candidly, it's not the same, you know, as being in the studio. And so my whole thing was, you know, I wanted to be able to, you know, cover our costs and cover the licensing for this stuff and make sure that, you know, our editing crew, you know, was still getting paid for, you know, for doing their thing and publishing shows out and all that stuff. It's been good. I mean, it, you know, now it's more a matter of, okay, this is what I think I've, you know, and you know, Fred has been an invaluable resource, you know, as we've been talking to him all the time, you know, whether it's you guys or our show or that kind of thing. You know, just trying to figure out, okay, this is what seems to make sense. You know, like I said, you know, the limits on the number of people in studios, swapping out the mic muffs after shows, you know, making sure everything gets wiped down really good, making sure everybody's wearing masks. We've got the infrared thermometers at all the studios now, you know, making sure that at least, you know, that's not an issue, even though you get a lot of that. Yeah, that's a whole quandary in and of itself, because that's not necessarily the best indicator, but it's there and it's one thing to check. You know, and then like IT and the D, you know, we haven't had a networking event. You know, we haven't had one of our events since, you know, the first week of March. We did one in Ann Arbor, and then that's the last one we've done. We didn't do the one that was going to be the third week of March for our Metro Detroit folks, and we haven't done one since. I mean, that's, you know, 4 months of, you know, two events a month that we haven't done. And, you know, but again, is it really worth it? And we're talking to both Detroit Shipping Company and Nancy Whiskey and a couple other places that have, you know, bigger outdoor areas that, you know, maybe, you know, when we do decide we're coming back with those events, that's the kind of thing we're going to be looking at, where we can spread people out and, you know, everybody's outside, you know, and kind of keep it, you know, safer as much as possible. We took a look at going virtual with those, you know, whether through Zoom or a bunch of other formats, just not practical. It just didn't mesh with how we try to do things. So, you know, we just kind of put it on hold and said, hey, everybody, sorry, we're not doing events for a while. It is what it is. Yeah.
And, as you know, we've been interviewing, as you said, Fred every week, and I can't say that Matt and I are experts, but certainly we've interviewed a lot of experts, and I just don't see anything really changing this year. Cause I was just reading some stuff this morning and watching some stuff on some TV networks, and they're experimenting with these vaccines, but A, they don't know if they're going to be effective. Mm-hmm. And B, they won't know that for months. And C, they don't know how quickly they could get them into production, because there's 9 billion people in the world, and it's going to take more than one dose of vaccine. So, I mean,
well, and we don't know the extent to which antibodies will even protect us at all. You know, I mean, they're not sure about that yet. They know it confers some protection, but they're not sure how much yet at this point. That's what the studies are about.
Right. And that was actually one of the really good parts of the last conversation we had with Fred. I want to say 2 weeks ago now was the last time we had him on. And we got into that whole chat because, you know, I've been talking about the Oxford virus, the Oxford vaccine, which is the one that you're probably talking about, that, you know, she seems to show the most promise and that kind of stuff. And that's great, but it's just going into its trials. And so when people hear, hey, there's this vaccine in trials, they start relaxing. And that's bad because, I mean, and this, like I said, this is where the biochem side of me comes out. And so like he and I kind of deep dove and just let Bob sit by the wayside on this one. But no, it was, you know, cause that we literally have to do in order to make this work, we literally have to do something. And when I say we, I mean the world, not just the United States, not just anything. Like, we literally have to do something that has never been done before. So you have to keep in mind, like, you know, you were talking about, Mike, the delay factors. So, you know, one, they have to get through the trials and actually prove it works. Two, then it has to go into manufacturing. So no, and the problem is you can't build a manufacturing facility overnight. You can't even necessarily retrofit a manufacturing facility overnight. And then you couple that with the fact that, okay, so no vaccine in human history has ever had more than 100 million doses stockpiled, created and stockpiled for it. If you truly want to hit herd immunity for this thing, that means you have to hit at least 60 to 70% of the people with active antibodies at one point in time. Now you have the studies that are coming out that say, hey, antibodies may only stay in the system for as little as 30 to 90 days. So, okay, let's talk 7.8 billion people in the world, 60 to 70% of that. 100 million doses is the most that's ever been made. We need 5 billion doses stockpiled up, ready to go, that we then have to distribute and hit on a global basis within about a 45-day window.
And we may have to repeat that every 90 days going forward, right? You know, if the antibodies only confer protection for 90 mm-hmm. days, then you're going to need another shot every 3 or 4 months.
Yep. Well, but so the thing about herd immunity is once you truly achieve it, you're in a much better space. You don't have to worry about, you know, 5 billion doses again. You know, and you can get by with booster shot. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you get a measles, you know, like the measles. So the reason why we're seeing so many measles outbreaks, and why those hit record numbers, you know, last year and this year, is because people stopped vaccinating their kids for it. And once that herd immunity drops below a certain percentage, now you don't have that safety. You know, you don't have the there's a great show that I watch that I highly recommend. It's on Netflix and it's, I believe, 3 episodes. And it's called Explaining Coronavirus. And Fred and I were talking about it and he loved it, too. And, you know, they basically kind of show you like a field of dots. And if you have like, you know, a red dot representing, you know, a person that isn't vaccinated, but if they're surrounded by green dots, well, that red dot can't get out and can't infect anything. You know, once one of those green dots in the circle turns to a red dot that also is not vaccinated, now there's an escape path, you know, for that disease to get out. And that's what you're seeing more and more of, which is the scary part. I mean, you know, that's, you know, and not to get, you know, all political about it. But, you know, for all the people that are, you know, the anti-vax people, you know, you think there should be no vaccines. You're seeing the results of what happens when we don't have one right now. This is the world without one vaccine.
Right. Only it would be true for about 10 other diseases besides this one.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this is one of the, you know, and I'm keeping a close eye on it just because I'm super interested in it. I mean, like, I love the science and the data and the math, and it's fascinating to actually, and I mean, it's fascinating and it's horrifying to watch this play out in real time. It's fascinating because I love the science behind it. It's horrifying because this is the first time I think a lot of people are seeing the scientific method play out in front of their eyes. Like, people are used to seeing the end result. Like, hey, science happened back here and here's the thing you need to know. And all they ever heard was here's the thing they need to know. Well, now you're seeing the theory, hypothesis, proof part all play out in real time. And so theory, at the beginning, yep, you know what? If you're healthy, don't wear a mask. It's no big deal. We think that's okay. Couple weeks later, okay, we now have new data that says that was wrong. Wear a damn mask. but the people are fixating on, well, but you know, but you said don't wear a mask and rah, 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 rah. Well, that's okay. Part of being an adult is when you get new information, you change your mind. That's how that goes. That's not flip-flopping. That's being a rational, coherent adult. That's how that goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sweden tried the herd immunity thing, and that has not really worked out well for Sweden.
Yeah, I mean, everybody held them up as like the gold standard of, you know, well, they, you know, they didn't lock down, and you know, they just put the, you know, the elderly and the immune compromised, and you know, had them isolate, and everything was good. And nope, I mean, as we're seeing now, you know, now they're getting ravaged. They have the highest per capita death rate, I believe. I'm not Fred. Don't quote me on that. But I believe they have the highest death rate per capita of any other European nation right now. And, you know, their economy is just absolutely destroyed. And that's the thing. Like, I get it. Like, so, I mean, as a business owner, it was killing me to have our studios closed. Drove me absolutely insane to close our studios. And in fact, you know, so that, like I said, we closed on the 16th that night of the, you know, the night of the 15th, we were up until probably 2 o'clock in the morning, all of us, you know, having a bunch of conversations and talking this through, because technically speaking, there was an exemption even in that very first order from Whitmer that said media production companies can stay open. And so it really came down to, okay, just because we can doesn't mean we should. And the way I put it was like, look, I am not going to be the one that has to look the friends or parents of one of our engineers or one of our show hosts or one of their guests or something like that in the eye and have to say, hey, sorry, they caught COVID in our studios and died. Like, that's just not something I want on my conscience or in my life. And so we shut down. And as hard as it's been, I love all of our clients for, you know, as being as understanding as they have been. There have been a few that have been a little rocky along the way. There was one that started pushing me real hard back in April about opening up, and we were on a Zoom and I looked at her and I said, look, here's the deal. You're in one of those tight and closed studios and somebody coughs and then sneezes. How comfy are you going to feel? And she kind of backed off and went, oh, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I'm like, okay, well, that's why I'm making these decisions and you're not.
Right, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that's my thing is, you know, I'm trying to not be the paranoid freak that I absolutely can be. But I'm also trying to be reasonable about it. Like, you know, yeah, I'm okay with a couple people in studio, you know, in a studio and then a break between shows, you know, to get everything cleaned and wiped down and swapped out and all that stuff and doing everything we can. And, you know, and I'm wearing a mask everywhere. You know, I tend to, unless I absolutely have to, I tend to not sit in the studio with the show because I'm trying to run as many of the shows as possible right now because it's not something I'm ready to throw an engineer at. And so, you know, I'm trying to not be in the room as much as possible unless they need me to like answer calls or, you know, set up, you know, with the Zoom stuff or whatever else. Just again, you know, it's your risk profile and what you think you know, where that trade-off point is.
So have you looked into any of the ultraviolet air handling equipment or equipment cleaning stuff? I see a lot of that stuff advertised, like the thing to, you know, sanitize your cell phone or whatever. I mean, have you looked into those?
Yep, actually we have. And there is an adapter kit for the heating and cooling system that's in our container. We have a dedicated, you know, standalone heating and cooling system in there. And there is an adapter kit that unfortunately is on back order and I can't get for 3 weeks. But it is ordered. And that's one of the things that I'm going to put in there just to be safe.
Sure. Okay, good.
But I mean, and that's, you know, that's the other thing is just, you know, being, you know, the difference with the, you know, the Detroit Shipping Company studio versus the other studios is, so with a single room, you know, I can just throw the door open, you know, and kick and let it air out completely and get, you know, fresh air in there and let, you know, and then go ahead and, you know, clean and whatever. So that, you know, which also helps it not smell incredibly like Lysol and bleach and everything else.
Yeah, well, sometimes it used to smell like something else, but
well, yeah, it depends on who was in the studios that day, yeah.
Well, actually, when people are doing that, I've been reading that that makes you immune to the COVID if you're smoking marijuana. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what some people are saying.
That sounds a little propaganda-ish, I'm thinking, yeah. But no, I mean, it's, you know, so that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's been, like I said, you know, the pedal pubs and all that stuff down at DSC, it's been really cool seeing, you know, because we've all read the stories about, you know, some store clerk getting shouted at by somebody who didn't want to put a mask on or something like that. You know, I've seen, you know, by and large, you know, they've got huge signs on all their doors that, you know, hey, you have to have a mask to walk in, yada, yada, yada. There have been a few folks that while I've been there that have walked in without one, and they've just flat out told, nope. Hey, you know, we've got one if you need one. And they've got like the little paper surgical mask, that kind of things that they can hand out to people. But no, you're not coming in without one. You know, and all the staff is wearing them. The cooks and the chefs are wearing them. And, you know, and that's pretty much true. I mean, you know, so I've been, like, I think I told you, you know, I've been to Temple. I went to Temple Bar one time, you know, and they've basically got, you know, plexiglass from the bar top to the ceiling, and plus they've got their back patio open. Whiskey in the Jar and Hamtramck has, you know, basically same thing. There's no, I mean, you can walk in with a mask on to order a drink, but then you have to go back outside. You have to be back on the, you know, on the back patio with the seating out there. There's nobody inside there, and people are pretty cool about it. I mean, like I said, you know, I've seen a couple people that have, you know, kind of got their hackles up a little bit about it, but you know, that's where, you know, either A, the strong-willed bartender, or B, peer pressure tends to come into the equation.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. This is the chance for you, Dave, to do a shameless plug.
Yeah, time for you to get a shameless plug in.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, we're, like I said, we're back up and running, you know, at least from a Detroit and Northville studio perspective. And we're, you know, we're still booking folks via Zoom, too. You know, that's all at podcastdetroit.com or, you know, Podcast Detroit anywhere, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, you know, all, Twitter, all the places. And then IT in the D, we always laugh, it's information technology in the Detroit. We are, you know, that same thing, you know, whether that's, you know, the website, Facebook, Instagram, everything else. You know, right now, obviously, we're mostly focused on our shows and memes to make people happy. That's mostly what you find on the IT and the D Facebook page is memes that make us laugh. That's, so if you need
so,
a good chuckle.
So who's on the show tonight?
Tonight is somebody from Duo Security. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. It's, you know, they just got bought by Cisco. You know, well, not just anymore, but they got bought by Cisco.
For $2.3 billion, but what the heck?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not a bad check to pick up. No. You know, goals. Hey, it's like, about, you know, hey, when Spotify bought Gimlet for, you know, 300 and some odd million, I was like, hey, we're here, we're available. I'm more than willing to have that conversation. But yeah, so, you know, just talking about, you know, what Duo meant to the community and the security scene here in Michigan, and how they think it's going to look without them here. You know, and what they think, you know, what them joining the Cisco family of products is going to mean, and how they see that going forward. So it should be a good chat. And then, of course, all of our usual, you know, news and events and stories that caught our eye over the course of the week, I'm sure will be, you know,
yes, the dumbest people of the week, that kind of thing.
Right? It's inevitable. I mean, you know, the format of our show has always been, you know, what do geeks talk about when they're sitting around a bar? You know, and it's not like we sit around, you know, yeah, we talk about security breaches and that kind of stuff, but we're also talking about Star Wars and movies and TV shows and all that kind of stuff that we've seen. So, yeah.
And of course, it's from 7 to 9.
Nine to 11. Yep. 9 to 11 live.
9 to whatever they decide they're done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because, well, and that's the thing. You know, we've one of our biggest lessons learned is we used to be really forceful about trying to keep ourselves at 2 hours. And what we found is that we were stretching it a lot of times, and that was kind of pointless. So, you know, sometimes our shows are only an hour long. Sometimes they're an hour and a half long. Sometimes we get Fred in, and we're going 2.5 hours. Who knows?
Around the world,
you know? Yeah, but I mean, no, I mean, okay, and those, yeah, and those have
it
been
started 9 p.m. It does start at 9 p.m. Yep. Eastern time, so set your clock by it.
Yep, and those have been great. I mean, our episodes with Fred are the ones that we get a ton of comments. We always get a lot of advanced questions now, because people have started to rely on him. Like the last one, we tried to focus on the schools reopening, and, you know, had a lot of my teacher friends that were ponying up with questions, you know, to get him to answer and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I hope everybody stays safe. You know, just wear your damn mask. That's really all it comes down to. It's not that complicated. Just wear it. It's fine.
Speaking of Fred, we wish him a speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
So join us again next week if he's able to, and we hope whatever he's battling right now is a minor condition.
For sure.
All right, but we'll be back again next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time with another edition of MITechNews.tv. Until then, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And see you again on the radio.